It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Well, hello and happy Friday to you. And I want to tell you, before we start anything today, that this is our last day to help Samaritan's Purse in their effort to get the gospel to all these kids that we sent Operation Christmas Child boxes to. So if you would like to help, it's $6 for each child. It's a message of the gospel for these kids that just got those cute little boxes with your gifts in them. And you can help us by calling 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can go to AFR.net, AFR.net, and make your donation. All right, well, listen, we're getting ready to enter a brave new world. And just kind of to put it into context, let's listen to Joe Biden the day before the election. Here he is.
We're going to act to get COVID under control. On day one of my presidency, I'll put in action a plan I've been talking about for months, already laid out, a national mandate. Mask wearing, social distancing, testing, tracing, all things, as President Obama just said, that should have and could have been put in place months and months ago.
All right, so that's not president-elect because the electors have not been assigned, but he calls himself that, Joe Biden. It will be a very different world if Joe Biden prevails in this post-election discussion of whether it's been fraudulent, this election or not. So I want to kind of put this in context. I got an email I wanted from one of our listeners, and her name is Gail. Gail said this to me. She loves the program, but she says, I have a concern about your stance on wearing a mask. Now, if Joe Biden is elected, each of us will have to, you will have to wear a mask. I'm not sure, you know, what the stipulations, if he will be like Gavin Newsom in California, where you have to wear it in between bites in a restaurant. Social distancing. I don't know if everything's going to shut down or if we'll be able to be with our families for future holidays in the, you know, unforeseeable future. I'm not sure what all that means, but it might, because we know that Joe Biden is not the one that's going to actually be running this. But she goes on to say, I have a concern about your stance with wearing a mask. I know you said you have research from another country, but there's probably research to support the other points of view, too. So I'm going to stop right there just for a second. And Gail say, yes, there's studies from all over the world, and most of them do not show that masks help at all. Dr. Fauci himself said early on that masks did nothing but make people feel better. That doesn't mean doctors in hospitals. They wear a different kind of mask under certain circumstances, but just general making people wear masks does not have much of an effect. The Danish study is the most recent one. It was the largest sampling, and ironically, this probably won't surprise you, Facebook won't let it be shared, Twitter won't let it be shared, social media will not let you read that study because it doesn't comport with their narrative. In regard to Sweden, Sweden is a country that did not do the social distancing, the masking, like countries in Europe and our country, and yet they had they've seen about the same curve, increase and decrease in COVID as the countries who actually followed those guidelines. We see that also like right here in this country, like in states like Michigan that have just been hyper shutting everyone down. It hasn't made any difference in the cases. It hasn't cut down on the cases. In fact, they have increased. So I'm just saying it doesn't make sense, Gail. That's why I'm not in favor of it. She talked about, she just came from a press conference from Governor DeWine's office because she's from Ohio. And the healthcare workers are pleading with everyone to wear masks, if not for themselves, for the sake of the healthcare workers, as the situation continues to escalate very rapidly all over the country. Gail, it's a twisting of things. It's just a twisting of things. Healthcare workers always are around infected people. It's the nature of the job. Doctors are. They have sick people come to them all the time. This is not new. And just to put this in perspective, if you are under 65, you have a 99% chance of survival if you get COVID. 99%. If you are over 65, you have a 96% chance of survival. You know, that's less dangerous than lots of stuff we do. Lots of our daily activities. You know, I don't know the stats on, you know, driving a car or riding a bike and having an accident or being killed. I'm sure there's probably a lot of similarities there. So infections spread, and this one is not very lethal. Why in the world would you want to spend the rest of your life in fear with such a low risk? I don't want to do that. I don't want my church to be shut down. There was a depressed pastor at a Methodist church whose church was shut down just last week because he came to the door of his empty church not wearing a mask, and so they're coming after him. Is that the way you want to live? That's not the way I want to live, and we're going to fight this. That's why I fight it. The things that you're being told in Ohio are not accurate. They are exaggerations of the dangers of COVID right now. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning. We got great stuff coming up. Stay tuned.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Once that is complete, our office, continuing our work to be transparent as possible, will be releasing the recount results online as quickly as possible. That is the great thing about our paper ballot system. It is auditable, it is recountable, and can provide voters the confidence that the outcomes are correct. Once this recount is complete, everyone in Georgia will be able to have even more confidence in the results of our elections. Despite the massive amounts of misinformation that is being spread by dishonest actors, there are those who are exploiting the emotions of many Trump supporters with fantastic claims, half-truths, misinformation, and frankly, they are misleading the president as well, apparently. There are two suits in federal court right now. One was already shot down and is being appealed. The other is just beginning. That is the due process afforded to us, all of us as Americans.
All right, that was the Secretary of State of Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, in a press conference earlier this week, declaring nothing to see here, folks. Our election was clear and fair, nothing to see. And if anyone tells you otherwise, they're just trying to play on the emotions of Trump supporters, and they're making fantastic claims. Well, I'll let you be the judge of the fantastic claims that we've been presenting to you every morning of various kinds. And I want to introduce to you my friend Scott Walter, who is the president of Capital Research Center. He's been our guest many times because Capital Research Center does some incredible work in D.C. They have part of their website is Influence Watch. Is that the right name, Scott, where you talk about all the different...
Exactly. InfluenceWatch.org is an online encyclopedia of the left. It's donors, it's activists, and all the rest.
All right. And I have to say that Capital Research Center has an impeccable reputation. They are rock solid on their research. But we want to talk about an aspect of the Georgia race that we have not discussed yet. And it's totally separate from the voting machines. It's actually separate from all the various voting irregularities we've been talking about, but it's stunning. So let's start this way. Scott, let's go back to pre-election Georgia, pre-election everywhere, where there was all this talk about COVID and how it was going to change the way we voted and the dangers and how were workers in these various states going to manage all of these mail-in ballots, et cetera, et cetera. So to the rescue comes an entity. Well, comes Mark Zuckerberg and his wife. So take it from there, if you will.
Sure. Mark Zuckerberg and his wife donated a total of $350 million to a group called the Center for Tech and Civic Life. Supposedly, this was that money then was supposed to be used by that nonprofit and handed out to local election officials all over the country to help them with carrying out the election in November, because obviously they would need extra help because COVID was placing burdens on them. Now, that's all plausible and on the face of it and the rest. But the only trouble is the group itself, the nonprofit, was founded by and is still run by very partisan Democrat activists. They'd all worked together at something called the New Organizing Institute, and that was described by the Washington Post as the Democratic Party's Hogwarts of digital wizardry. That is to say, it specialized in using social media and other means to activate donors for the Democratic Party. Now, that's a perfectly fine thing to do if you are a 501c4 or a party organ. But now these people are working in a 501c3, like, you know, the YMCA or your church or the local women's shelter. So we're supposed to believe that they took hundreds of millions of dollars and doled it out to local election officials and did so in a completely nonpartisan way, despite being such long-time and top-notch partisans. And even then you might believe that until you start looking at the actual vote in the state of Georgia, for instance, where
okay,
where
well, let's
their
do
money looks to have been very partisan.
Yeah, okay, and we will jump in with those details. I want to back up to something. I just want to sit on this for a second. Facebook. Anybody listening, use Facebook? You know, Mark Zuckerberg, that young, not so young now, but this genius who created Facebook with his wife Priscilla, made all of this money, and we all use it as this friendly little tool that we use to communicate pictures of our families and all of that. And I think Mark Zuckerberg has made great effort to demonstrate in the hearings on Capitol Hill how nonpartisan he is and how he wants to remain neutral. Has he said that? It certainly seems to me, Scott, that he has tried to indicate that, don't you think?
He certainly tried to say that, yes.
All right. So Mark Zuckerberg, who's made so many millions off of you using Facebook, I'm not talking about you, Scott, maybe you do use Facebook, but I'm talking about the listeners, this friendly little outlet that we have for social sharing, has made all these millions, and now he spent it and gave it to this organization called the Center for Technology and Civic Life. And Scott's just given us a taste of what that's all about. And you did say, I want to repeat, New York Times and Associated Press both, when this started happening, were kind of remarking at how could this be that all this outside money would come to such a partisan group? In fact, you quoted the New York Times, right? But you said the Associated Press also commented on that, right?
Exactly. The Associated Press, and I spoke to the reporter myself. He was nice enough to quote me in his article. But when he was writing, not quoting me, just writing himself, despite being your standard liberal reporter, he was honest and spoke specifically of, and I'm quoting him, the democratic origins of the Center for Tech and Civic Life. And he also noted, and I'm quoting, its donations have predominantly been in areas where Democrats depend on votes.
Yeah. Okay. So in Georgia, now we're going to get to other states in a minute, but this is your first report, and it's a good one. You say that this organization is supposed to make the amounts that they receive, because they're 501c3, available to the IRS, but they have failed to report the amounts that they got. So you really don't know what those amounts are, do you?
Well, what we had to do, you're right. We don't know. We don't by any means have a full accounting. A year from now, when they have to file with the IRS, they will be legally required to reveal any amounts of $5,000 or more that they gave to government entities. Right now, we are working off of every news report of funding that we've been able to find. And we were able to find roughly half of the counties in Georgia where they funded. We were able to find a news report explaining how much they had given.
Okay, so let's break this down, because you have a whole bunch of things that you found. We can't talk about all of them. But what are the most important indicators or trouble spots you think in terms of the data for how this money that was poured into Georgia actually resulted in some kind of a result in various counties? What did you find out?
The only thing that they can say in their defense is that they funded more counties that went for Trump than counties that went for Biden. And that's true, although they still skewed their funding very much to Biden counties. And the two ways, the two biggest statistics for me on all this, the first would be that of the counties, for looking at counties that voted 10,000 or more votes for Biden versus 10,000 or more votes for Trump, right? So the most vote-rich counties, they funded about 20% of the Trump vote-rich counties, and they funded 70% of the Biden vote-rich counties. So that's 3.5 times more likely to fund the Biden vote-rich counties than Trump ones. And the other one that's just – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, just to flesh that out a little bit, because it's hard to, you know, it's hard to listen to numbers. So couldn't it be that just those counties happen to have a ton more Biden supporters? Does it really mean anything that that they poured more money into the Biden counties? Does it really mean that made a difference? I mean, how does this work exactly? What does that exactly mean?
Well, the... of course, for most any state, and certainly in Georgia, there are the Biden voters are very densely clustered in a few urban areas. And virtually, you know, the vast majority of counties, of course, in the state went for Trump. But the vast majority of counties are relatively small and rural. So what the CTCL did was fund in places like Atlanta and Athens.
Okay, and so the idea was to turn out more voter. There were Biden voters there. They wanted to turn more of them out.
That is what one would strongly suspect. And you know, the easiest way to understand this is to flip it around. Imagine if a conservative leaning billionaire like Charles Koch had given hundreds of millions of dollars to a group who's entirely run by people who used to work for Karl Rove and the Republican Party, and then they turned around and handed out money mostly to Republican vote-rich areas. Everybody would be up in arms over that. That'd be front-page New York Times news.
So you have private entity Mark Zuckerberg supposedly just helping because of COVID, with the money that he gives being targeted to Democratic areas to turn out the vote there, but not so much Republican areas. So that's that's easy to understand. All right, so what other data point really jumps out at you?
The biggest one of all is this. Georgia, obviously, is not traditionally a Democratic state. Trump didn't have trouble winning it in 2016, for instance. But in 2020, it has allegedly gone for Biden. So if you look at the 10 counties that had the biggest shifts toward the Democrats and Biden, 10 counties in the whole state, and there are roughly 150 counties, so the top 10 shifting their vote in a blue direction to the Democrats, CTCL funded 9 out of 10 of those counties. The thing about that, too, is those are not all Democrat counties either. They are roughly half and half Democrat-leaning counties and Republican-leaning counties. But their vote shifted very heavily toward the blue end of the spectrum. In fact, the average shift in vote was 13.7%, which is huge. I mean, just 2 or 3% shifts in votes win elections, typically. To have a almost 14-point shift in 10 counties, almost every one of them funded by Zuckerberg and the Democrat operatives, that's really impressive.
Okay, just to restate this, Scott is with Capital Research Center. He's the president. And this is an analysis of what happened with Georgia with all the money that Zuckerberg gave the Center for Tech and Civic Life. So these are numbers that they've analyzed and statistics that they followed. And so another data point that jumped out at me, Scott, that you wrote is that of the 4 counties won by Joe Biden that delivered him votes in 6 figures, the Center for Tech and Civic Life funded all 4. So I just think
exactly.
Yeah, so There are a lot more data points on that. In fact, let me just read this last one, because I thought this really put it well, too. The most vote-rich counties for Biden were 3.5 more times likely to be funded than the most vote-rich counties for Trump. So, in other words, they're supposed to be a bipartisan effort on Zuckerberg's part and also on a 501c3's part to help just get out the vote or to bring out voters to overcome the limitations of COVID, but actually it was money targeted to help Democrats get out the vote. That's the inference from these numbers and analyses. Now, you say, oh, this really struck me because I've heard this conversation with some people that you and I both know, that this was not necessarily illegal. What would you say about that, Scott?
Well, this is one of the things, if this election does nothing else, it will help educate all of us on the actual systems that we have in place across the country. There isn't anybody who can give you a definitive answer, Sandy, on whether this was legal or not, because the law is so murky about tax-deductible nonprofits like the Center for Tech and Civic Life. On the one hand, the law says it is permissible to use your money for registering voters and getting out the vote. On the other hand, it's illegal to do it in a partisan fashion. But it's completely unclear whether carefully targeting localities and demographics that you know will vote the way you want them to vote, is that illegal? There's no clear answer in the law. I think there should be. At the very minimum, I think there should be a clear answer. And my own preference would be to not let 501c3 foundations like Ford and the Soros's Open Society fund these things, and not let 501c3 public charities like the Center for Tech and Civic Life execute registration and get out the vote.
Scott, this is an opinion question, not about the objective facts that you found, but the Secretary of State, Scott Raffensperger, shouldn't he have seen this coming? Shouldn't he have been aware of all that money coming into his estate and kind of been an overseer of how that was being spent and what it was being used for?
It certainly would have been nice, and there are people filing lawsuits. Now, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't speak to how powerful of a legal theory this is, but in multiple states, there are people suing the state governments, including secretaries of state, for not stopping this, because theoretically, a secretary of state should be ensuring that everybody in the state votes in the same kind of, with the same kind of process. And in this case, you had really significant differences county by county on how the voting process occurred.
Yeah. So another thing that you point out, just to drive this point home, you have really uncovered why it was well known that the Center for Tech and Civic Life was a leftist organization. Give us just some highlights of what you found about their connections and who they've done work for, what we do know about them.
Sure. And again, you're right. This was well known because the New York Times and the Associated Press were writing about this at the time. The Center for Tech and Civic Life was co-founded by a woman named Judith Friedman. She's a long-time and big-time Democratic strategist. She worked on John Kerry's presidential campaign in 2004. She worked in 2005 as the senior political strategist for the AFL-CIO, one of the most politically powerful left-wing, Democrat-leaning unions. They give almost 100% of their money to Democrats. She worked as digital field director for Obama's presidential campaign in 2008. So that was a co-founder and longtime president of the New Organizing Institute, where the leaders of Center for Tech and Civic Life got their original training. The other thing is you can look at the funding for Center for Tech and Civic Life. For instance, it's got significant grants from the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. That's a philanthropy best known for being a top supporter of the Iranian nuclear deal, which we all know Democrat President Obama arranged for and Republican President Trump ended. The Center for Tech and Civic Life has also gotten at least $690,000 from something called the Democracy Fund, which is really Pierre Omidyar, the eBay billionaire, and the single biggest funder of all Never Trump causes.
Wow. Okay, Scott, I'm going to, this is just amazing. We're going to put this article of yours on our Facebook page because it's Georgia election officials, a billionaire, and the nonpartisan, quote, in quotes, Center for Tech and Civic Life. It's an excellent article. And quickly, in just a few seconds, you're going elsewhere to find out the traces are Mark Zuckerberg's hand, right?
Yes, our next state report will be on Pennsylvania. I hope to finish that today. And then we want to tackle Michigan and Wisconsin.
Excellent. And by the way, Scott testified yesterday in Georgia. And so this will be, you'll be hearing about this today as the day goes on. Scott, thank you so much for your time. Capital Research Center, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This voter fraud that took place, which as you will see from the witnesses that we call, had several dimensions to it, several different ways in which it was done. The most dangerous thing is it is very, very similar in at least six states that we've been able to study. In other words, what we're going to describe to you with these witnesses happened in roughly the same way in Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia.
All right, that's the familiar voice of Rudy Giuliani, who's serving as President Trump's attorney. And that was part of his opening remarks in that hearing held in Pennsylvania just a week or so ago. All right, so we're hearing that these, the things that Rudy Giuliani is saying and Sidney Powell and all the others are just wild accusations, just off the reservation, just crazy people. But it's funny because I keep coming up against people that actually have tremendous gravitas and intellect and experience who say quite the opposite. And that's my next guest. Ken Blackwell's bio is so long that it would take the entire 20 minutes we're going to spend together to tell you what it is. But for the purposes of this interview, he is the former mayor of Cincinnati, Ohio. He's also the former Secretary of State of Ohio. Now, keep in mind, the Secretaries of State are the ones that are overseeing the voting process in each of their states. Ken knows all of this from A to Z, and that's what particularly gives him the qualifications to speak about the process and what's been happening. So, Ken, thanks for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Sandy, it's good to be with you.
All right, I'm going to quote.
This is an important time in our nation's 244th year as a constitutional republic. I'm not sure that there's been any greater crisis in that 244 years than the crisis.
I don't disagree, and actually I want to quote you. This article, it's a very powerful article, maybe one of the most important I've ever brought to your attention. It's called The Greatest Electoral Heist in American History, and we're going to put that on our Facebook page, but I want to read Ken's opening to you. He says, the pieces are finally coming together, and they reveal a masterpiece of electoral larceny involving big tech oligarchs, activists, and government officials who prioritize partisanship over patriotism. The 2020 election was stolen because leftists were able to exploit the coronavirus pandemic to weaken, alter, and eliminate laws that were put in place over the course of decades to preserve the integrity of the ballot box. But just as importantly, it was stolen because those same leftists had a thoroughly crafted plan, and they were rigorous in its implementation and ruthless in its execution. And that's the way the article starts. Ken, I thought we weren't supposed to say stolen. I thought that was like off base. That's a little too extreme. Are you sure it was stolen?
Absolutely. When you look at the weakening of those guarantees are those processes, policies, practices that bring integrity to elections, if you see how they were systematically weakened or destroyed or ignored, stolen election, those are most appropriate. There's a disturbing pattern in five or six states that undercut the whole integrity of elections in those states. Let me just look. As an election administrator, we look at a couple of things. One, we look at chain of custody. We want as tight a chain of custody of a voter's ballot as possible. We don't want a lot of hands touching that ballot once it leaves the hand of the voter and is tabulated. That's why in-person balloting is the most secure. It's the tightest chain of custody. As Rudy was saying in those comments that you played, under the cover of COVID, one of the things that we moved to was a massive mail-in balloting without the adequate infrastructure or experience being in place. And as a consequence, we destroyed in the five states that we're looking at, we destroyed the tightness of the chain of custody. The other thing that we, as election administrators, we work on is verification. We want to make sure that there's not an illegal ballot that negates legally cast ballots. And so we put a great emphasis on verification. We want to make sure that the voter is who he or she claims to be. And so we have signature matches. We have voter ID processes and requirements. And in many of the areas, these things were destroyed. These were eliminated. They were forgotten. And as a consequence, a disturbing pattern at just about the same time happened. You know, whether it was in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, but let's not stay with those three Midwestern states. At around midnight, Trump had a very comfortable lead, which was reflective of his race and the results in other down-ticket races in those states. Around the same time, all of a sudden, vote counting stopped. And between midnight and 6 o'clock in those three states, all of a sudden, there was a voter dump, a ballot dump. And miraculously, Biden, at around 6 o'clock, had a slim lead where he, at midnight, had been losing dramatically. There was no reason in these places for there to be that discontinuity in counting the ballots. It is statistically questioning and questionable as to how someone who was had you know, long coattails and affected a major realignment of the voters across our country was all of a sudden losing. And so what we have asked are for audits, not just recounts, because taking ballots, the same ballots, and pushing them through the machine again, that's a mind-numbing non-starter. You need to go and say, let's see how many of the ballots that were cast have jackets that have signatures that match with, because you can't get it back on the ballots. But let's preserve those jackets or envelopes that those ballots were in. Let's look at the signature on those. And that's comparing with the signature on file. That's an audit. That's meaningful. And there's great resistance to this.
Yes, I know. And even from Republican secretaries of state like Raffensperger, you know, he just made a statement in Georgia a couple of days ago, Ken, about how great their process was. He wrote an article, I think, in the USA Today, and how the people that are, you know, making up these wild theories are just stirring up the disappointment of Trump supporters, and on he goes. Well,
It took court action to stop them from erasing, you know, the evidence on the machines. I mean, he was rushing to do that because he understands that an audit of this process will show that his statement that this was a perfectly executed election with just the normal glitches will be proven to be a false statement. And therefore, what I've tried to concentrate on, Sandy, is empowering, and it gets a little bit more complicated in Georgia. We'll come back to that. But in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, we have legislatures that are controlled by the Republicans. They can continue to prosecute this in the courts, but I think it's time for us to investigate within those bodies that are responsible and empowered by the United States Constitution to set the rules, to set the schedules, and to do the audits. Those are legislatures. And I think in Pennsylvania, we're starting to see movement in that direction. I hope that we can buck up the folks in Michigan and Wisconsin, because I think they have it within their authority to expose the fraud, the anomalies, and basically say we're going to seat the electors that we think are consistent with the will of the voters of our state in light of this massive evidence of irregularities, fraud, and anomalies that are inexplicable in terms of logic.
Let me jump in and say that people are listening and they are always asking, what can we do? What can we do? And I have a suggestion. There is a great website. I've given it to you before. And when I gave it to you, the last time I gave this website, I think 500,000 of you responded. It's everylegalvote.com. On that website, you'll find the latest election information. And on that, more importantly for this discussion, you will find a very easy way, meaning easy for you in terms of the workload, of contacting all of your state legislators and asking them to take action, to do something, to take their rightful place in this chaos and do what Ken is asking. It's everylegalvote.com. Write it down, share it with your friends and neighbors, and then this will give you, listen, you can, these state officials, if they get thousands of responses, they respond, Ken, don't they? I mean, because they're not used to getting that.
They really do. Because the third thing is that we can demonstrate was that there was a lack of transparency. And if I can just go biblical for a minute, Sandy, you know, in John 3, we're told those who would do evil love the darkness. We as believers across this nation, you know, we can't put our light under a bushel now. We, in fact, must hold our candle high, and we must collectively and individually, wherever we can, punch holes in the darkness. We must bring transparency. We must bring lift, you know, to those policies, those actions that will protect the integrity. Because, look, this is larger. I said it before. This is larger than Donald J. Trump. It really is. This what's on the line here is the integrity of our constitutional republic, something that has been a lighthouse for the world in terms of dignity and integrity. That's on the line. We can't turn a blind eye. We can't turn down the volume. We must push this all the way through.
Ken, I would love to hear a conversation between you and some of the people I know in D.C. who are saying, look, the president just needs to concede. Let's just get this over with and, you know, we'll have a fresh start. But we have to focus on Georgia and the runoff election, that's where our efforts should be, not on continuing to just go on and on with the presidential election. I'd love to hear your response to that.
Well, my response is that is mind-numbing stupid. And again, I don't say that. I say that to make a point, because I try to respect the dignity of all that I engage. Look, if we don't shine a light on the irregularities, anomalies, and just flat-out criminal transgression, my father, he gave me a rule of parenting. He said, as a parent, you have to understand this. If you reward bad behavior, all you're going to get is more bad behavior. And that applies across the board. If we turn a blind eye, if we walk away, if we said the president should concede, believe me, those things that happened to him in Georgia will happen January the 6th.
Absolutely. Well, I've said the same thing, and I don't ever understand how so-called intellectuals who are in the zone of D.C. become so dumb. Because honestly, though, you took the words right out of my mouth. I don't understand how smart people can be so dumb. But nevertheless, you've laid it on the line. I want to mention a couple of things in your article, specifics, that just really struck me. Before you joined us this morning, we talked to Scott Walter of Capital Research Center, and we talked a great deal about the Center for Tech and Civic Life and Zuckerberg's donations to them, and especially specifically in Georgia. But the thing that you add to that, because you talk about it also, is that I did not realize that the role of David Fluff. What role has he got in all of that, and also in the election chaos we're experiencing?
Well, David Fluff, you know, Barack Obama's former campaign manager, took a leading job providing the leadership for the policy and advocacy efforts of Mark Zuckerberg, and therefore, I mean, he laid out a very strategic plan to capture block by block key Democratic strongholds in swing states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, you know, among others.
Georgia.
And Georgia. And to run and to make sure that they got control through laundering the money into the government of the apparatus running the election in those key areas and key counties, key states. And you have to understand, he donated $400 million. Zuckerberg, and that was as much money as Congress appropriated for the same purpose.
Right, and let me just capsulize this again. I think you said this, but I want to repeat that Barack Obama's former campaign manager, and he went to work with Zuckerberg deciding how this money is spent, and then he writes this book called Citizen's Guide to Defeating Donald Trump, and then they actually implement the policy. Now, you say that it's Thomas More Society, the Amistad Project, which is, I've been hearing more and more about them. They are really pushing back on this and tried to stop this particular bit of chicanery from happening with the Zuckerberg money, but they to no avail. But they're doing some great things now. Do you think they have a chance of getting a foothold in pushing back on what's actually happening in these states?
Absolutely. Has happened? They are pit bulls. They're not going to let go of this bone. They're not. We are determined to shine light on these dark activities. And the reality is that, you know, what they have done under the cover of safe and secure elections as a consequence or in the age of COVID, they have made some of these practices, if we don't expose them, permanent features of our election. And therefore, we must call out those Republican officials that are complicit. We, in fact, must do the tracking of the dollars and show that the citizen that Pluff was talking about in A Citizen's Guide to Defeating Donald Trump, that citizen was Mark Zuckerberg.
All right, so, Ken, I know the answer to this because I told you personally that I've never seen you so you've always been enthused. You've been a great public servant in so many different areas, but I see you as just determined, bulldog determined. I see that in you. You think we can prevail in this to win back the republic, don't you?
I really do. We just can't quit, and that's my clarion call. When Nehemiah was told to rebuild, the walls of the city of Jerusalem, he sent out that clarion call. He said, "Come, let us build together." And look, all of us need to take place, need to do what we can with where we are, with what we have.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let me do this. Then the article is The Greatest Electoral Heist. It will be on our Facebook page. Please share it. Read it and share it. It's a great read. And also everylegalvote.com. We'll put that link on our Facebook page. But just remember it and then go there and then do something to contact your legislature to ask them to take it. And it has other people to contact too. Ken Blackwell, thank you, Ken. Thank you so much and God bless and keep you. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.